Welcome to Orphaned Entertainment, the podcast dedicated to public domain and abandoned media. I'm your host, Christopher, and if the spirits are willing, they will let me speak to Lydia. Lydia, are you here? Can you hear me?
I must insist that you all listen with sincerity and silence. I can hear you, but it's so loud. There's some noise. It's interfering with the spirits.
Excellent. Well, glad you are here, Lydia.
Me too.
Before we go any further, thanks everyone else for tuning into this month's episode. Hopefully you can hear it without any interference. Orphaned Entertainment is available wherever you get your podcast and wherever you choose to listen. If you have the option to do so, please rate and review the show. That does help get the show in front of more eyes and hopefully in more ears. Another great way to help is just by sharing the episode you're listening to on whatever social media platforms you use. You can follow the link in the show notes to all our social media sites, as well as find our YouTube channel where you can watch many of the films we have covered here on the show. If you'd like to email us with any comments, suggestions, or feedback on this or any episode, please type a recorded message and send it to orphanedentertainment@gmail.com. Let's listen to an Ellery Queen one-minute mystery and a promo for another podcast. And when we return, we'll gaze into our crystal balls to see what happens in darkened rooms.
Ellery Queen's Minute Mysteries. This is Ellery Queen with a case I call The Psychological Error. Police were befuddled by the story of a man named Ames who said he had shot his neighbor in a fit of complete terror and fear. Ames said his neighbor had approached him while he, Ames, was out shooting. The neighbor had repeatedly threatened me, Ames said, and in panic, my reflexes told me to fire. I told him I didn't know where he was getting his reflexes tested, but they weren't working. In a moment, the rest of the story.
C-3PO.
Loki.
Mace Windu.
Dr. Bruce Banner.
Captain Rex.
Venom.
Princess Leia.
Jean Grey.
Darth Maul.
Nick Fury.
Grand Moff Tarkin.
Captain America.
Lando Calrissian.
Cyclops.
What do all these characters have in common?
Well, two of them were played by Samuel L. Jackson.
A couple of them were played by Hammer Films veterans Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee.
Come on, guys. You know this.
Well, of course we do, Jessica. Just like Mickey Mouse and Captain Jack Sparrow, they're all now Disney characters. Hello, I'm Tracy of the Disney Indiana podcast, and my co-host Scott and I enjoy talking about all aspects of the House of Mouse, and that includes their newest properties, Marvel and LucasArts.
We also talk about Disney resorts, the cruise line, theme parks, and whatever else Mickey has to offer.
Which includes movies, Imagineering, video games, and collectibles. You'll never know what we'll decide to talk about.
So check us out at www.disneyindiana.com or do a search for the Disney Indiana podcast on iTunes, because now we've got a lot more to talk about.
And don't forget about those other quote-unquote Disney characters like, well, Sully.
Fozzie Bear.
Buzz Lightyear.
Link Hogthrob.
Doug.
Janice.
Merida.
Pepe.
Bruce.
Ralph the Dog.
Wally.
Dr. The Disney Bunsen Indiana Honeydew. Podcast. Syndrome. Even after 5 years, we are still miles away from the nearest Main Street, USA. We're not listed on the map, but you can join us at www.disneyindiana.com.
In the case of the psychological error, a shooting by reflex as a result of fear is not reasonable. Reflexes are the result of conditioning. The murderer tried to fool me with psychology, but I psyched him instead. Listen again to Ellery Queen's Minute Mysteries.
Darkened Rooms is a 1929 drama from Paramount Pictures starring Evelyn Brent and Neil Hamilton, and it was directed by Louis G. Gasner. Emery Yago... Did they say Yago or Jago? They said Jago, didn't they?
They say Yago, Yago, Jago.
Okay.
I think Yago is how people settle into pronouncing it eventually.
Okay. Emery Yago is a photographer working along the boardwalk who seeks advice from his neighbor, Madame Silvara, about getting into the fortune-telling business in order to make more money. Having read up on hypnotism and spiritualism, he thinks he can get a rich customer to score a large amount of cash. An attractive out-of-work dancer happens by looking for some photos for her portfolio, and when Ellen passes out in the studio from hunger, Emery feeds her and tries out a little hypnotism, trying to put in a mental suggestion that will force her to return to the studio that night.
Like you do. I mean, anytime you meet a stranger, you just try a little hypnotism to get him to come back.
When she returns, she claims it was her own choice and not anything he may have done. Emery hires her to work in the studio and to assist him in his endeavors to strike out in the fake seance business. This is the third time we have seen Evelyn Brent on the show. We were immediately enamored with her in 1930's The Silver Horde, and even more so in Framed from that same year.
We love Evelyn Brent.
We really do. Both of those episodes are in the feed and on the website at orphanedentertainment.com. To recap, Evelyn began her career in 1914 and worked in silent films for 14 years. Sadly, most of her silent work are considered lost films. She transitions to talkies in 1928 and works steadily into her last appearance in 1950's Again Pioneers before retiring from acting. This is the third time we've seen Neil Hamilton as well. We first saw him as the leader of the evil cult of Gamba in 1961's The Devil's Hand. And later we saw him as one of the Jest brothers in Paramount's 1926's silent version of Beau Jest.
And in case you guys forgot, this is also Commissioner Gordon of Batman fame. But of course, much, much, much younger and very good looking.
Very much. Yeah, he's a handsome, tall, handsome fellow in this film.
He is.
Neil came up working in stock theater companies before getting his big break in 1923's The White Rose. He worked with Paramount Pictures in the 1920s and MGM in the 30s. And in a 1970 interview for the book Whatever Happened To, Hamilton said that he was effectively blackballed from A-list work in the early 40s after insulting a studio executive. I don't doubt that. The way Hollywood worked in the 40s, I imagine if you got on the wrong side of somebody, that could easily end your career.
Yeah. I mean, who of us hasn't lost a job because we laughed at the wrong moment?
It was not till television that that Neil Hamilton was able to get a new beginning. From 1948 to 1953, he hosted Hollywood Screen Test, a talent show that was the first regularly broadcast television series produced by ABC. Hollywood Screen Test sought to give exposure to up-and-coming actors who were looking for their big break. The actors would be picked to guest star on the show, then they'd have their half-hour scenes of dialogue with more well-known stage and screen actors. I really like that idea, actually. I think that's kind of cool.
I was just thinking, I wish that I knew where to find some of those episodes, because you know that there were people that showed up on there that you'd go, oh my gosh, I can't believe they were on this.
Yeah, I know. I have not, but I think I will try to look and see if I can find any of those episodes floating around on YouTube or archive.org or somewhere.
Definitely.
It would be fascinating because you know there's going to be someone showing up and you're going, oh my God, that's like Clark Gable.
Oh, man.
Hamilton also appeared in guest starring roles on many series, including Perry Mason, 77 Sunset Strip, and Maverick. But it is, in the 1960s, Hamilton appeared in three Jerry Lewis films, The Patsy, The Family Jewels, and Which Way to the Front. And as Lydia said, he is, of course, most well known for appearing as Police Commissioner Gordon on all 120 episodes of Batman from 1966 to 1968.
I would hum the theme song, but I don't think I'm allowed to.
Yvonne Craig, who played Commissioner Gordon's daughter Barbara, a.k.a. Batgirl, said Hamilton came every day to the set, letter perfect in dialogue, and never missed a beat. Consummate professional.
Oh.
Briefly, I wanted to mention a little about comedian and actor Gail Henry, who plays Madame Silvara. She appeared in over 230 films over the course of her 20-year career in front of the camera. In the 1920s, she actually owned a production company that had a contract with Special Pictures Corporation that had her making 12 two-reel comedies per year. As well as appearing on screen, she and then husband Henry East trained dogs for motion pictures. The East Kennels trained some of the most celebrated dogs in cinema, including Skippy, the terrier who played Asta in The Thin Man.
Oh, I love love that. When she showed up on this movie, I thought she reminds me of somebody, but she's just so much fun to watch. She's just that character.
She has the face where you see her and go, that's a comedic actress. Yeah. This exactly. is how she's making her bread and butter.
Yes. I really enjoy her character in this. We'll have to talk about her in just a minute. But mm-hmm. I thought she, of the characters that were in this that weren't the main couple, she was definitely my favorite.
While she appeared in several more short films, Darkened Rooms is Henry's last feature film. So after this, yeah, she kind of did some short films, but generally retired from the motion pictures. And then, of course, her and her husband had The Kennel, which apparently was a very successful endeavor. So
definitely.
But yeah, since we've talked about everybody else so much already, that's really all I have around as far as background and stuff. Yeah, this is really probably the smallest cast we've had in a long time as far as like actual important characters.
Yeah. I think there's one couple that's sort of important because they reflect the story, the main story arc, but we never get a name for any of them. Well, it's not one couple, it's one guy and a parade of women that show up with him. Which is a really cute way to kind of give you a litmus for where the main couple are without really saying where they are, right? They do mm-hmm. a really good job of, we probably should talk about it like in more detail, but you know, you start off with this sailor coming in with this total floozy, just high pitched, annoying giggle. She just wants to see the horse. Right? And then the next time he shows up, he's with this woman that is in charge. Mm-hmm. She is the one that is pulling all the strings, taking care of everything, telling him what to do. And then the last one he shows up seems like is going to be the right one for him. But it's really, it's just this cute little kind of side detail that they put in there that seems like it's not that important, but it adds just a little bit of almost setting to where they are. Because we open up and it's showing all of this. It's almost like it's like a pier amusement park. I don't know if it's at a pier.
I said it was the boardwalk, but absolutely. Yeah. They're definitely on the East Coast because I think someone mentions that they had to go to a Long Island or something mm-hmm. like that. So they're in effectively New York, and it's, I don't know what the big like boardwalk amusement park is on Coney Island.
Coney Island.
I guess it would be Coney Island. I get the feeling that that's probably about where they are.
Okay. And I could go with that. They show, you know, some roller coasters going on and people doing different things. And what one thing that really kind of cracked me up is there's a shot of a carousel and it's four horses wide, which is a big carousel, by the way. And it is going so fast.
Yeah. I think it's more like a horse racing, I think is the idea. It's like it's supposed to be like in a horse race. Yeah.
But I thought it was a carousel. And the reason I thought it was a carousel is we are relatively close to the National Carousel Museum. So we went up there out of curiosity
Very neat. I would definitely love to see that.
They have, of course, they have some very old carousels. They have from like the hand cranked ones all the way up to more modern ones. They have some great history. They have a working older carousel there. And we got on that thing and it goes so fast. I was scared. I thought I was going to fall off. And so watching this, I thought, you know how in a lot of older movies, they kind of speed it up to make it seem more exciting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't think that's sped up. I think it's really going that fast because they were terrifyingly fast back then. It's just crazy.
Yeah, no, it could have been some sort of carousel, but I think the theme was like you're supposed to be in like some sort of horse race or something like that. That's me taking it just because of the speed and the way everyone was riding it, because they're actually kind of pretending to, woo, you know, like they're jockeys and stuff.
Oh, come on. You haven't done that on a carousel?
It's been a long time since I've been on a carousel.
Well, it's funny because from my experience, I thought, oh, it's definitely a carousel because some of them went that fast. Like, what feels unsafely fast. Right. But it'd be interesting to know.
I think the last time I was on a carousel, I wanted to like ride in the car or something like that, though.
So. You know, when I was a kid, I liked to ride in the chariots. The chariots, that's what they're called, chariots, Christopher.
So yeah, they do set themselves as being in the boardwalk. We've got Madame Savara right next door doing her fortune telling, and then we got Emery doing his photography. And yes, in his studio, he has a mounted horse on like the back wall.
Like a stuffed full life-size horse that I have to think is actually a stuffed horse.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So this is the, is this a Trigger cameo?
Yeah, that's actually exactly what I thought of, too. It's just, you know, we just came out of that movie.
I'm a little disappointed that we didn't get to see outside of the studio really more in the story. I mean, we do, like you said, we get the little montage that kind of sets the place of, okay, they're on the Coney Island or on the boardwalk, the amusement park and everything. Would have been kind of fun if maybe we had actually seen them walking along this boardwalk and not just Evelyn Brent's feet.
Yeah. We get a long shot of a street with like double shops along both sides of it for kind of actually held for rather a long period of time, I thought. And also we get just one moment, I think, where Emery, where Iago goes out, he runs out after her to not really to catch her, but to kind of see which way she goes, I guess. But beyond that, yeah, it's all inside and it really takes place almost just in three or four rooms, the whole movie does. We get a shot early on of Madame Silvara's place, but that's the only time we get to see it. Most of the action takes place in the room next door to the studio.
Right.
And then a little bit in another house and a little bit upstairs and a little bit in the studio. But it's, like you said, it's a very small main cast. Mm-hmm. And it's a really small set. It didn't take much to film this.
Now, this is another one of those films where, while I don't think it was, it could easily have been a stage play sort of thing.
Very easily. And actually, I think this would make a great stage play if somebody wanted to make another, like to make it into a stage play. I think this would be a lot of fun.
I could easily see where you could pull this one off. Mm-hmm. And it would be kind of like a fun one to do as well, I think.
Yeah.
You could almost do more as a stage play than you could as a film.
I definitely think so. And on a stage play, people are willing to accept kitschy special effects where maybe in movies they aren't. And so this would do, I think, probably better as a play, a modern play, than it would as a remake film.
Mm-hmm. Right off the bat, I mean, our opening scenes with actors, anyway, is in Madame Silvara as she's reading someone's fortune. And she gets disrupted by someone, I think, actually breaking into her kitchen and knocking over her table. And I really love Silvara because she's looking at the guy's palm and she's like, oh, I see a storm and loud thunder. And then there's a crash in the other room and she goes to check it and she just looks at him and looks at his hand and says, read it yourself. Yeah. You mentioned that she was like a favorite character of yours in this story. Yeah, mine as well, just because she has some of the best little lines and just best little moments like that. The read it yourself and then...
Oh, what a pity, dear. That storm in Spirit Land seems to have frightened her away. But your sweetheart says for you to come here often, and she'll talk to you and help you.
Madame Silvara, I've heard somewhere that there were such things as photographs of the spirits.
And you'd like one of your sweethearts. Ain't that sweet?
You see, I never had a real good picture of her. And if you could get one for me...
But they're expensive, young man.
How much?
Could you pay $25?
Gosh, that's a lot, isn't it? But I guess it'd be worth it to me.
Be here tomorrow, and I'll have it for you.
Thank you. How much do I owe you?
No, not here. This room is sacred to the dear spirit. There's no thought of material things. Come outside. $2.
Goodbye.
Don't forget tomorrow.
No, I won't.
Yes.
Yeah, her whole demeanor changes. Yeah, she was great.
She is. Yeah, she's very funny.
And she's also, if you watch her, she's also one of those actors that has like the really good the expressions
yes.
to go along with everything.
Yeah, when I first saw her, I thought for a second she was maybe the same lady that played the Wicked Witch in The Wizard of Oz.
I could see that if only because of the nose, maybe. The kind of oddly shaped nose. And
yeah, which was a false nose on the actress that did The Witch and The Wizard of Oz. But they have that like really narrow facial structure, and they have that kind of not squeaky voice exactly. It's not obnoxious, but I love that about her too, that there are times when she sounds, oh dearie, and she sounds very nasally, and then when she's telling them about the plan to go talk to the other people, she's just totally normal. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like she's putting on this image of herself even before she ever puts on the image of Madame Silvara. She's also putting on this woman, but then really when she gets down to business, she's very serious about it.
Ain't that sweet? I think then we meet Emery, and yeah, the what do you call him? The sailor coming in with one of his girlfriends.
Yeah, yes.
This guy, they say that a sailor's got a girl in every port. This guy's just got many girls in the same port.
I wonder if he even has many ports.
Is he really a sailor?
Yes. At one point I thought, is he just dressing up pretending to be a sailor just to get girls?
I think that would be just as reasonable as anything else.
I think so.
And I guess that's about when Evelyn shows up. And again, when Evelyn Brent shows up, and I know I've said it probably repeatedly on the last two films that we've watched here, she just, to me, has such a naturalness about her.
Mm-hmm.
The way she talks, the way she moves, I feel like she has such a modern persona about her,
mm-hmm.
you know, for a 1920s, 1930s actress.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many in this time, especially with a girl or with a woman who has come up through the silent era.
Mm-hmm.
You expect someone to be overly dramatic and
yes.
to be, you know, performing to the back of the theater and everything she does and says. But she's just very much just, she's here, she's just this person, and it just so happens there's cameras rolling.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, she's very natural. Like, it's hard to say enough good things about her. I think she's one of the few people that I think it's a real shame that people age and die, because I think she would be such an interesting person to talk to just meet with. I mean, of course, I'm sure she has. I mean, it would more even than just saying, oh, what was Hollywood like back then? She as herself seems like just a captivating person. And I actually was kind of, it's funny, going into this movie, I really thought that Neil Hamilton, and I didn't recognize him at first. I didn't think he was going to be a good enough to carry a scene with her. I thought he's a little bit, like, he's fine. Right. Mm-hmm. But he's not. I mean, Evelyn Brent to me is like a real actor. She's solid. She's just one of those. There are a few people out there that you're like, this is a person that can carry a scene opposite anybody. But you always kind of worry a little bit that the person that she's opposite will maybe mess it up. And it's not so much that I thought this guy's not going to be able to act. It was more he's this kind of flighty guy. And he is, when we watch The Silver Horde, can't remember his name, but the actor opposite her really, like, I felt like he was solid and could really move forward. He presented as, like, a kind of tough, solid person. And coming into this, Iago's not like that. He's, like, he's just this kind of guy that he's interested in trying different things and especially in making money. And mm-hmm. so he's just reading a lot about spiritualism. But he's not a person that's been out fighting through the Yukon to try and, you know, driving sled dogs through the Yukon in the middle of snowdrifts. You know, you're kind of like, he's... But what happens with that is his purpose isn't to be the strong man opposite her strong woman. He is supposed to be a flighty character. He's supposed to be somebody that actually really needs somebody to look after him. Like, he's doing okay on his own, but he really could actually use an assistant. When he says that, I thought, sure you do, buddy. But really, he could use an assistant, and she turns out to be the person that helps him. Like, you kind of get the idea that she's helping him get this whole photography studio more on track and doing better and more productive. And so, you know, even though he brings her on because she's an actress and because he has this specific role in mind for her, she really is the perfect partner for him, not just because she can act and pretend like she's being possessed by spirits, but because she actually has a solid head on her shoulders. She's the one that thinks ahead and can tell him, hey, I got a bad feeling about this. And so even though it feels like at first, yeah, this guy and this girl may not be a good match for each other, it turns out that actually, because he really needs her, it seems like they become a good match for each other. It's an interesting dynamic.
Very much. As far as Neil Hamilton's acting, I think there are moments where I think he does really well, you know, against Evelyn Brent. And there's other times where I feel like he feels more like the, you know, 1920s actor or the early 1930s actor, the way he speaks and everything, it almost reminds me more of like Dwight Fry before he goes crazy in Dracula. And, well, when I walked in and saw this, I thought I was in the wrong place. You know, that sort of thing. Just the way he carries some of his lines. You know, there's moments where I think he does really well. And you're right. If I didn't know it was him, if I didn't know it was Commissioner Gordon, I don't know that I would recognize him, except there's just a few moments when he, just the way he says certain words or something like that, it flicks on that little bit of familiarity.
They're yeah.
Like, boy, he sounds familiar. I wonder who that guy is. And I'd look him up and go, oh, that's Commissioner Gordon.
I feel like there's one scene that proves the opposite of what you're saying. There's a scene where we haven't even talked about Joyce and Billy yet. Joyce is the Clayton daughter, the famous Claytons, the very wealthy Claytons that they decide to fleece. Well, that he decides to fleece. And she has a fiance or a boyfriend who died in a plane crash, and she's currently dating Billy. Mm-hmm.
Billy. Oh, I want to talk about Billy.
And there's a scene where we have Emery and Billy, Iago and Billy, alone together. And it's the only scene where they're talking just to each other and there's nobody else in the room. And it's the Bechdel test of scenes. It's not. It's the inverse of Bechdel tests. But it's but you have Billy, who is, I think, the quintessential 1920s actor. He's very much the, no, Joyce, don't go in there. It's not safe. Yeah. And when you put him up against Neil Hamilton, Neil Hamilton feels a bit more natural. Now, I also think probably people really talked a bit like that back then. Like, we don't really get a good handle on it, especially when we watch modern historical films. They don't talk the way people really talked back then. And we don't write letters the way people wrote letters back then. We don't even write letters anymore at all. But we don't write emails the way people wrote letters back then. We just don't communicate the same way. And so that, I think, to me, makes Evelyn Brent all the more interesting. Almost like she was, I swear she was a time traveler. She just...
I really feel like she's a late 20th century woman that somehow got transported back to the early 1920s.
Yeah, she really does present that way. But I think that it makes her stand out more than it makes other actors feel awkward or strange in the movie. Mm-hmm. I think they just, even when you're talking about Gail Henry, she also kind of has this cadence that's a little old-fashioned. And so it's tough when you're opposite Evelyn Brent to not seem old-fashioned and a little kitsch and a little not great acting. But I think that he carries it well enough, maybe up until right at the very end, which is a hard scene to play. I'm sure we'll talk about it. But yeah, I think overall he does okay. And I also think that he's meant to be, he's not necessarily meant to be younger than she is, but definitely is meant to be more immature.
I don't know. I almost feel like they were trying to make him older than she was. Because he kept saying things about, you know, little girls shouldn't go without eating. And he kept talking to her like she was younger than him.
Yeah. And it's possible they were trying to make that happen. But the character is less mature than hers is.
Oh, very.
His character is maybe, you know, I think we get the idea that very clearly that she's been through the School of Hard Knocks. And so, you know, she says things to that effect. She also says, you know, oh, I've heard it from guys. They say, little girl, why don't you come stay with me? I don't know if he's the first one to use that phrase or she is. But again, I think for him, he's intended to be presented as a character that's he hasn't really been through that much difficulty.
Right.
But he just wants to grasp whatever he can without thinking through the consequences. So whether he's supposed to be older or not, he's definitely the less mature one.
How long since you've eaten?
I'm not old enough to remember that far back.
I thought so. You know, little girls shouldn't go without eating.
I'm reducing. I'm on a 365-day diet.
Where do you live?
Say, I swore I'd stop the next guy that asked me that.
Then you haven't any place to stay?
They all say that. And then they say, why don't you stay here with me, little girl?
Oh, no, really.
I know all the answers. Well, I don't mean you, though. You've been darn nice to me. Tough racket being a girl and broke.
Yeah, apparently, as far as the actors themselves, he was only about 4 or 5 years younger than she was.
Okay, so he was the younger. How interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember us commenting in The Silver Horde about her. She comments in that movie about being a much older woman than the lead male in that movie, who we also love. I'm so bummed that I can't think of his name. But it's interesting. She has been in Hollywood for, at this point, 15 years. So she's been an adult for at least 15 years. So she is very likely older than a lot of her male co-stars. But I think in this one, they're not necessarily making a point of that. But yeah, she's just a fascinating character. Is there a book on Evelyn Brent? Darn it, I need to read the book on Evelyn Brent.
That would be very fascinating. Joel McRae is the name we keep trying to come up with.
I had
to finally look it up. Because we've
so
seen him a couple
her.
Times in a couple different films. And yes, mm-hmm. he is actually very good.
Mm-hmm. Well, so should we talk about Joyce and Billy?
Yeah. We're introduced to Joyce and Billy at a big dinner party. And I really disliked Billy right away.
Yeah, but I've been remembering my lines. Just a moment, please. Something I want to say. Won't you sit down?
I promised you a big surprise tonight. And now I'm going to show it to you. Something quite unusual. You are going to see some rather remarkable entertainers.
Sword swallowers?
I know, train steel.
Oh, no, my dear. Something quite different. They're spiritualists.
Oh, we're going to have a seance.
And what are they supposed to do?
Well, I'm not quite sure, but it's said they have very remarkable powers.
Well, anything for them. Everything goes down the living
room. Oh, no. Come on, you know, I went to see a circus committee once, and you know what he told me?
Poor Daddy. He has the strangest ideas of entertainment.
I wish we could run away just by ourselves.
Oh, we couldn't. And besides, the seance may be fun.
Well, I'm not so sure. It may depress you, dear.
Oh, I don't think so. I'm not depressed much these days.
I know. You can't help thinking about it sometimes.
Well, sometimes. But it's getting further away. And when we're married, I know it will be all gone.
Oh, I love you so much, darling. I'm going to make you so happy. You'll see. Really happy. You know that, don't you?
Oh, I do know it, Billy, darling.
But you think about it sometimes, huh? It's like, well, yeah, because you keep bringing it up, Billy.
Well, I mean, he is the jealous boyfriend.
jealous of her late fiance or boyfriend or whatever it was. But yeah, I couldn't believe how, you know, she's like, no, I'm fine. Really? Are you fine? Because your boyfriend died?
Okay, this is this is very funny. And it's also a little bit familiar. No, my boyfriend didn't die, before you guys all get concerned for me. Thank you. This is a little bit where I feel like Billy is very clearly a product of this era, and Ellen is way, way ahead of it. Evelyn Brent. Ellen is Evelyn Brent's character, by the way. I didn't just call her the wrong name. But if you talk to older people, elderly people, I would say, they're a lot more likely to say something like that. They're, you know, and I have one person in particular in mind who may or may not be a relative. Hi, Dad. And who's really likely to say something like, you know, I'm really worried that you're going to be upset because somebody's going to remind you of your cat that died. And you're like, you literally just did it. I know right. You're being concerned for me, but you didn't have to say that. And I think that Billy is doing that. I think he's like, I mean, to be fair, he's reading from a script, right?
Right.
The writers are working very hard to make sure you know all the really important things about the story. Oh, yeah, so you don't get
all this is a little bit of exposition. I understand.
It is. But I also think there's a little bit of, again, just product of the times. Depending on who you're talking to, they might actually say something like that.
That's all I can imagine is life with Billy. He's like, oh, I'm having a great time. It's nice that you're having such a good time, being that you're a widow.
Yes, exactly. Well, I wouldn't want you to feel lonely now that your husband died. Wow. Thanks, Billy. That's so kind of you.
Yeah, life with Billy, I think, would be terrible.
He is overbearing. Part of that is he behaves, he acts, his acting is a bit overbearing. Mm-hmm. And part of that, I think, is also it's in the script. They want to make sure that you know that Billy is gonna protect Joyce even if it kills her.
Yeah, absolutely. And apparently, you know, as it turns out, Billy really isn't wrong as far as like Joyce really has no business being anywhere near Ellen and Emery.
Yes. Which, you know, it feels very weird at this moment because he shouldn't know that.
Right.
And so this line feels very forced, or the scene feels very forced, because it's kind of put in the wrong place. It's almost if they had gone through that whole thing and then after the seance, after...
She's made it. Turn on the light. Be quiet. She's going into a trance. That means the spirits want to speak through her. It means there's a message for someone here.
No. No, I can't do it. Please don't make me do it. Please, dear, do it. Yes. Yes, I can hear you. Can't you speak louder? It's so hard to hear. There's that whirring noise. Such a loud noise. Sounds like an aeroplane. I get the name Jane. You want to talk to... No. No, it isn't Jane, but something like that. It begins with a J. Yes. Yes, he's going to spell it out for you. Thank you, dear spirit. J-O-Y... C-E. He says he must talk to Joyce. Where are you, Joyce? He wants to talk to you.
Yes.
He says he's been trying so hard to reach you for so long, and you wouldn't listen.
Don't listen to it, Joyce.
Whirring noise. I'm tired. I'm confused. I can't hear anymore.
Oh, you must.
No,
you
Joyce,
must hear
don't.
More.
Just keep Ask him calling if he's sick. For Joyce.
Ask him if he's sick.
He says it's... He wants to tell you. He wants to tell. Oh, I've lost it again in that noise. That whirring noise. I
can't hear anymore. I can't hear anymore.
You must hear more. You must let him speak to me.
He grabbed Joyce and said, I was worried this would happen. I didn't want to say anything, but I was so afraid that, and I don't believe in this. That would have been the right time to have this scene. But since it comes before anything bad happens to Joyce, it feels just out of place. Because it is. Yes. It's at the wrong timing.
Yeah, no, very much. Yeah, you could have easily worked that stuff in, and we could have learned about her late fiancé through the séance, and then a few lines afterwards, like you were just saying with Billy adding a little bit of exposition.
But we
find
out before because of the newspaper clippings. There are paper clippings.
Oh, yeah, good
point.
That's true.
Yeah, and so it's really an unnecessary scene. The only thing that it does is establish Billy as Joyce's current love interest, but they could have done that a different way. And so it's just, it's unfortunate phrasing, it's unfortunate lines, it's unfortunate timing. It just needed a little tweaking.
Mm-hmm. Now, the whole kind of basis of this film, you know, is that Emery has and Ellen have studied newspaper clippings and information that was provided to them by Madame Silvara about this woman.
As spiritualists did at the time.
Yes, it's very much, this is very much right out of the headlines of the day. Spiritualism was very popular in the 1920s and the 1930s.
Yes.
And around this time, there's people like Harry Houdini going around and debunking all these spiritualists and mediums and explaining how they did this sort of stuff. And this is exactly the kind of stuff that he was saying, no, they aren't getting messages from the other side. They read
it's
the newspaper.
Yeah. Yes. There's a really good book somebody recommended to me a couple months ago called The Shabti. It's S-H-A-B-T-I. And I highly recommend it, especially if you like this era. It takes place in the late 1920s, early 30s. And it's all about a former spiritualist. His job is he goes around debunking things, has a little twist in it. Not going to tell you what it is, but highly recommend it. Loved The Shabti. Go read it. It's great. But it all of the things that he's talking about are like kind of covered in that book. So he, at the very, very beginning, Madame Silvara has a customer that is talking to her and says, oh, hey, I heard something about being able to get photos of spirits. His sweetheart died and he wants a photo of her. And so the way that Ellen and Madame Silvara and Iago all kind of get together is he's going to take a picture of Madame Silvara with this ghostly girl in the background. And he hires Ellen to do that and swathes her in this
white linen.
Yeah, sheer fabric. Linen is exactly what they used, actually. But there are fascinating, fascinating things that they would do. Like they would regurgitate ectoplasm, which we thought came from Ghostbusters. Nope. Guess what? They were using that term in the 1920s. And they would like have it come out of their mouths. Mm-hmm. And it would be like just soaked, compressed, like cheesecloth, basically. But in these darkened rooms, they would produce these things. They would do table rapping. He mentions that he can do table rapping with his toes. They would pop the bones in their toes to make the knocking noises. It's fascinating. Highly recommend you read that book. Sorry, I got really excited. So when I started watching this movie and that was what was going on, I was like, oh, I know so much about what they're talking about because I had read this novel. But it's fascinating. Like, and it's sad because, like, Joyce, I think her response is in this, although they may be a little melodramatic, again, a product of the times, a product of the direction at this moment in time, her responses, I think, are very genuine to what people would have felt then. Mm-hmm. And I think the way that they script Ellen spilling these details, she's not saying, I have a message for Joyce Clayton from the other side. She's playing this reluctant vessel of spirits from the other side. No, I don't want to. Don't make me. Yes, yes, I can hear you. Okay, go ahead. I can hear you. No, it's too noisy. It sounds like an airplane. She's not saying, I have a message for Joyce Clayton from your dead fiance who died in a plane crash, which anybody would go, oh, come on. How did you find that out? And she does such a great job when Joyce starts standing up and saying, that's me. It's me. What is he saying? And she keeps talking over her.
And right. She just, I really like that because
so
I was like,
great.
Yeah, effectively, like, she's not hearing her. All she can hear is the spirit. So she's
exactly.
just repeating what the spirit is
she's
saying.
She's in a trance. Yes. Yeah. It's so well done. And mm-hmm. I think it's better done than a lot of modern movies depicting this era, depicting this moment, this what's the word I want? this kind of phenomenon in time where it was just, there was such a short period of time when this could happen from the late 1800s to the early 2000s. Sorry, guys. The early 1900s. Because as soon as technology starts picking things up and people can debunk these things and we start having radio programs that can explain it, at the point that technology and information starts spreading, you can't continue to have this kind of phenomenon for very long. Most people, there will always be some people that believe it, but most people will stop believing in it. But it's depicted so well in this movie. Even when Iago is draping her with the linen and, you know, kind of putting the swathes over her, and it's, you know, meant to give this really ghostly effect, it really does. Mm-hmm. And if you just saw it as a blurry image behind a clear photograph of a person, you know, we've all seen those photos. I assume we've all seen those photos and we know that they're faked, but they give you chills when you see them. It's so much fun to see it.
Oh, very much. It's, I've seen a lot of photos and it's amazing that as long as there has been photography, there's been people doing trick photography.
Yes.
And doing these little things where it looks like they're floating or mm-hmm. yeah, it looks like there's a specter over their shoulder. And it's mm-hmm. like, yeah, as soon as someone figures out a way to utilize a technology, someone else figures out a way that they can toy with it.
It sounds like you're describing AI. Yeah. It really does though. There's so much now coming out and it's, in a way, it's kind of the modern version of this. You have these infomercials that are very clearly not real people. Mm-hmm. And the voices we know are not real human voices. But it's talking about, you won't believe what my boyfriend, blah, 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 you know. And it's a kind of spiritualism of the modern era. It's something that is easily discernible as being fake. All you got to do is switch the light on. But we still are buying into it. We are willing to believe. There are always people that are desperate to believe something that will sell them what they want to buy, even if it's not a real thing. Yeah. Sorry, I just kind of soapboxed there.
Yeah, that's exactly what goes on. That is exactly what goes on here is Joyce, with only a little bit of prodding, is desperate for this yes. message from her fiance. I'm just going to go with fiance.
Yes.
For her fiance, Dick, who mm-hmm. died in some plane crash. I guess, you know, probably in the war, you know, World mm-hmm. War One, maybe.
Maybe. Yeah. Or just as, you know, she's
or he's
heiress.
Just a pilot. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe he was a wealthy, you know, playboy pirate kind of pirate.
Pirate.
kind of or pirate. Arr, you never know.
And so after that, yeah, she's just desperate to get this. And, yes, she is then fueling everything that goes on from that moment on forward.
And they even say that. He even says Madame Silvera says when they're meeting about the Claytons, she says, you don't have to do anything but get them interested. Mm-hmm. Don't do anything else. Like, don't try and sell them anything. All you need to do is get them curious.
Oh, and Emery even does it as they're leaving Mr. Clayton, you know, like, well, how much do I owe you? Like, yes. Oh, no, we don't do this. I mean, he acts offended.
Yes.
We don't do this for money.
Oh,
you know?
We would never. We just, all we're asking for is our travel. Like,
right.
why would you insult us with your sordid money?
Yeah,
he doesn't say that, but that's the attitude.
But as soon as the door closes and Ellen asks, I thought you said there was going to be money in this. He's like, mm-hmm. You wait till she comes to us.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, that is the one thing where I'm not exactly sure how they were going to go from this to, oh, and you need to pay us to Joyce.
Yeah. I think there's, so, I mean, what does happen is, Ellen becomes concerned. Mm-hmm. She's like, this is too dangerous. obviously we've got this boyfriend, Billy, who is already kind of onto us, or at least suspicious, and I don't want you to end up in jail, and I sure as heck don't want to go to jail, so I'm not going to help you anymore. And I kind of think that if she had continued to work with Iago, he had kind of a plan for that, right? For one thing, I feel like in this context, a woman is going to trust another woman who is saying, oh, no, there's danger. You need to, oh, he's telling you that it's dangerous. You need to trust your money to somebody that can care for it for you. Mm-hmm. And then it could have naturally led into,
okay. Oh,
you'd like us to care for your money? Well, we can do that. We're your friends. We're just trying to help you out here. But when Ellen walks away from the situation, then Iago has to, like, he has to make something up. And what he makes up is extremely clumsy. I think... It's too much. He just does too much too fast. And he does that because he feels the time pressure. Joyce is going to leave town. And he's like, I got to get the money now or I'll never get another chance. He gets fixated on this one thing instead of what the intelligent person would have done, would have said, you know what? This is a bad bet. I'm going to walk away from it and find another one. And he doesn't do that. He's just too immature to let it go.
Right. That makes a little bit more sense, because yes, I wasn't sure how the natural progression of, oh, we don't do this for money, and oh, you want to hear more messages from your fiance Dick, you're gonna have to pay us,
you know? right
that to me is just immediately the door slams,
that know? Is like, a
what?
Yes,
no, I'm not gonna be yeah, what do you mean?
Yeah. And Joyce is suspicious when Iago makes his finally, like, his desperate attempt. She says, oh, I'm not sure about this. This seems a little bit weird.
Right.
You know, and I think that if he had continued to push her, probably at some point he would have ended up in jail.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Ellen to the rescue.
Yeah, and Billy. Billy shows up again, the superhero Billy.
Yeah, Billy does show up again. So there's a second meeting, and Joyce comes by herself, she thinks. And then a moment later, there's a pounding at the door and Billy demands to be let in. Is Joyce here? I love the response. This is the scene where I feel like Neil Hamilton does a really good job, because even if his acting isn't shining, I feel like it's a well-scripted scene and it makes a lot of sense.
Is Miss Clayton here?
We're closed for the evening.
I saw her come in here.
Billy, you had no right to follow me here.
I followed you for your own good. I was afraid you were coming here. Now listen, you've got to come right home with me.
I'm afraid your hostile attitude will prevent our getting results.
Please go, Billy.
I won't leave you here alone.
Well, perhaps Mr. Iago won't mind if you promise not to interfere.
Ellen. Oh, Ellen.
Oh, I'd like to speak to you alone for a minute, Mr. Iago.
Sure.
Now, look here. I don't know what kind of a show you're going to put on here tonight.
Hardly a show, Mr. Fox. Miss Clayton wishes to communicate with someone beyond the veil. We are trying to help her.
Yes, I know all about that. But Miss Clayton's gone through a lot of trouble. You mustn't tell her anything that'll make her unhappy. Do you understand?
We tell her nothing. The spirits speak through us. We're only their servants.
Well, I don't want her upset. And if anything funny happens...
They're waiting for us upstairs.
And I feel like that's the scene between the two of them. It's definitely not like a key scene. It, you know, very, I think it, nothing at all hinges on it. But that's the scene where I feel a little bit like if Ellen and Iago had carried through with this together, they really could have been a dynamic and terrifying pair of con artists.
Oh, very
She's
much.
Got the brains and he's got the determination.
Yeah, yeah, very much. And my apologies, I kind of conflated two scenes into one.
That's okay.
And it made you kind of have to jump back. I forgot
That's
about
right.
that middle scene.
Yeah.
It was not connected to the final scene.
Yeah. Yes, they are technically different. They all take place in the same place, though.
I think that's where I was kind of a little bit confused.
It does get a little confused. I mean, when you're going back and talking about it, in the moment it all makes sense and it's very linear progression, but going back and talking about it later, we have a whole period of time where Yago refuses to talk to Ellen because she said, I'm not going to help you do this anymore. Mm-hmm. And so we have, who knows if it's hours or days or months? We aren't told, but we know that Yago is still obsessed with, it's really funny too, because I forget how she phrases it, but essentially he's obsessed with getting that Clayton girl. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what did she ever do to you?
Right.
She was rich, darn her.
Yeah, you hit on something right there. Is the amount of time that passes between any moment in this film is a little difficult to grasp.
Mm-hmm.
Even right from the beginning where Emery wants to hire Ellen, you know, he sets her up for the photo, and then, you know, the screen fades, and when it comes back, apparently time has passed.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a night, it could be a month, it could be 6 months.
Yeah.
Really have no idea, but Ellen is now integrated. She's part of the photography shop. She comes in, she's like, oh, you up? Okay, I'll start breakfast. And she knows who, you know, she's very friendly with Madame Silvara. Okay, so.
Well, I guess this is later.
Yeah, this is definitely a film that needs a calendar flipping or something, you know.
And I actually wasn't bothered by that. You kind of, there are little verbal cues to let you know some time has passed. You know, like Madame Silvara says, like, how's it been going? Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay. I mean, being a native English speaker, I understand that means there's been some time that's passed. You've been doing this for a little while, you know, and then you have the one night of Ellen and Yago going to the Clayton's house, and that all happens. And then at some point, and we assume it's not the next night, Joyce comes over, and I'm not even convinced this is the first time she's come to the studio. It seems that, and I could be, you know, just not remembering it super clearly. I watched it twice, not 12 times. But it almost, there's a moment in there where I almost felt like this might not be the first time she's come. It seems like they've been kind of having these meetings maybe a couple of times. This is maybe the third or fourth time she's been there, and she's hooked, but they're not necessarily at the point of getting the money out of her. Like, they're stringing her along, they're gaining her trust. And then at that point, when Billy shows up and basically makes a fist fight out of it and physically threatens Ellen, and of course, which Yago is not having, you know, and ends up getting himself punched, I believe. At that point, she's like, nope, Yago, you're physically in danger. I care about you. I am not going to help you keep putting yourself in danger. Great boundary setting, by the way, Ellen. Bravo. We all need to learn to do that. I care about you. I love you. But I am not going to facilitate you destroying your own life. Good job. And so who knows how long this has been going on? Like you said, there's no timeline specifically telling us. But I'm kind of okay with that.
Okay.
I feel like I'm told well enough in this story what's going on, what the progression is. I can predict what's probably going to happen. Twist.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what was going to happen, which made me really happy about this movie. But
well,
I was pretty sure I knew what direction it was going in.
I guess the only reason that it bothers me that there's this leap of time that we don't know how much is because so much apparently happens in this gap.
Mm-hmm.
That we, you know, that when Ellen and Yago are at the Claytons waiting to go in, you know, they're sitting there on the couch and they're talking, and they're like, "Well, don't you know I'm loopy for you?" And
yes.
Oh, I am too. From the minute you walked in my show, like, well, okay, so there's been a freaking romance that's gone on,
and I think
off camera,
yeah. Well, and I think. And I'm extrapolating here for sure. But he then introduces Ellen as his sister.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they work around that. They backburner that by saying, oh, now they have to pretend to be brother and sister. It's not well explained. It's not clear. I think that the difficulty there is that they're not clearly showing you or telling you that then Ellen and Yago then are just separating themselves. And they're like, well, we have to wait until this big heist is done. or the not heist, but this big con is done. But it seems to me like that's kind of the direction it was pushed in. I also, though, really frankly, Ellen says, can't you read my mind? Like, can you guess what I'm thinking right now? And he's like, oh, you're trying to tell me. And she's like, yeah, I'm crazy about you. And he goes, well, yeah, I've been crazy about you from the start, too. And I'm like, but have you really?
Yeah.
Really?
Right.
Mm. And I think his actions later imply that he really does come to rely on her and care for her.
No, absolutely.
But at that moment?
No, I agree. But because we don't see this relationship blossom at all, his words sound hollow.
I also kind of think he's just kind of a flimflam guy. I think he's like, he's the guy that is gonna, well, he thought he had hypnotized her into coming back. And when he finds out that's not the case, he's kind of going to be like, oh, I'm not as cool. I'm not as amazing as I thought I was. Oh, well, but I got to keep you around. So, oh, yeah, sure. I fall for you, too. I totally. Yeah.
Right.
Totally, girl. Ditto.
It's in the script. You know, the whole idea. I'm not sure why they decided that, we're going to pretend to be brother and sister. I'm not sure why they went that route, because that to me feels like somewhere down the line that could get really awkward.
From a spiritualist standpoint, I think it makes perfect sense. I think you had a lot of people back then saying, this is my auntie, this is my nephew, this is my sister. These are my family members. You can trust them. They're also, we're all spiritualists. We're all in this together. And this is my relative who you absolutely can trust. This is not a random stranger that I met one day and asked to help me with something, which sounds suspicious, right? I think there was probably quite a bit of family making up. Now, again, I'm extrapolating. I'm inferring. But I think looking at this particular type of con, I think it's not that surprising for somebody to say they're related to another person they're not related to, but who's in on the gag.
I could see your point. I could see where if she's your sister or he's your brother, obviously I wouldn't lie about her ability, because it adds in that little, an additional element of trust.
It would embarrass my family. I would never, impugn my honor by lying about my sister or my brother.
Right. So that does make a little bit more sense. My point was more about the idea that they're in this whole group, that they're living and working on Coney Island, park, boardwalk or whatever. Mm-hmm. He rents a photography studio where anybody can come in.
Yes.
And what if he suddenly, let me get my wife, and in comes, weren't you at the seance and wasn't that your sister? Yeah.
Well, I think if you're, yes, you're not wrong. 100% you're right. But I think that he's thinking, by the time that we're that far down the road, I've got the 10,000 and I'm gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll be in Florida somewhere or California.
I'm not convinced he intends to take her with him at the beginning. I'm really not. I think he sees that she's, potentially a really good actress. He needs an assistant. He already knows he needs to have a girl for this photo. She's here. Yeah, she's here. So keep her hanging on as long as he can. Maybe he doesn't ever intend to cut her in on the money. That definitely happened. There definitely are people that we know from the beginning, that Madame Silvar is not telling the truth, because she's going to charge this guy $25. By the way, $25 back then was like $500 today.
Yeah, that's good money.
It's good money. And so she's going to charge this guy $25. But when Iago asks, how much are you charging him? She says, oh, not a dollar. It's all out of the goodness of my heart. He just wants a picture of his sweetie. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, since you're so kind and wouldn't charge him for that, I'll do it for free. And she's like, what do you want? they know none of them are really fully trustworthy, certainly right. Not the two of them. So again, we talk about these movies after we've watched them a couple of times. We speculate a lot because we can't interview the writers anymore. And this is a period of time where they're cranking out dozens of movies a week or a month. And honestly, if they thought that in depth about it, it's kind of an anomaly. It's a little bit unusual for them to think that hard about it. So more likely somebody is either just making up a fun story or they're saying, oh yeah, I went to a seance once and this is what it was like. And you're getting a little bit of personal experience, but most of all, they're wanting to tell something entertaining.
Right. Yeah, this is a film that someone's going to, you know, put down their 5 cents for. They're going to watch it and they're going to leave. And maybe they'll tell their friends a little bit about this movie and that, oh, that, you know, that handsome Neil Hamilton or whatever.
Yes.
But yeah, there's not podcasts. There's not radio shows. You might see a little blurb in a newspaper if a critic went and saw it.
Yes.
But yeah, they're not... they weren't designed to be examined.
No, they never in a million years thought that there'd be a couple of people 100 years later sitting here picking it apart scene by scene. It's entertainment, and it is entertaining. Do we want to give away the big ending, or do we want to leave it at a dun-dun-dun and find out by watching this film yourself today at your local cinema? Just click on Orphan Entertainment on YouTube.
It's up to you. I feel like the ending kind of comes a little bit out of left field. I like that it's not maybe what you, like, as you said, it's not what you were expecting. It's not the direction that you think this film is going. Well,
so let's leave it up to the listener. So if you want to, if you've already watched this movie and you want to go ahead and explore the end of it with us, just keep listening. And if you don't, then Christopher will drop a timestamp here so you can skip to the rating and not get the movie given away. But honestly, I think you should just go watch the movie right now and then come back and listen to the rest of it.
Yes. If you've got an hour, you've already probably listened to us as long as it would have taken you to watch the film.
If you haven't watched it yet, what are you doing? You're probably driving. That's okay. Don't watch movies and drive. Be safe.
No, good call. All right, so yes, what we can talk about the ending. Yeah, Ellen hatches a really great plan to try to turn Emery off of the idea of spiritualism.
Yes. Yeah, because he's just in it for the money. He's, from the beginning, just intended to find a really rich mark and get a lot of money out of him. And so it's not like he's invested in it. They are making decent money through the photography studio. He doesn't have to be doing the spiritualism thing. He just has this bee in his bonnet about it. Gosh, is that... I'm just using a whole bunch of old-fashioned phrases today. And he just won't let it go. And so Ellen decides to protect him from himself.
And she gets a... someone she must have worked with on vaudeville or something, some performance in the past, an actor or a comedian, impressionist.
An impersonator, I think he says he is.
Hello, Bert.
Hello, Ellen D. I'm glad to see you.
Why, Bert Nelson. I hardly know you.
Oh, well, I don't blame you. The way I look now, my own mother'd hardly know me.
Bad breaks, huh, Bert?
Oh, nothing but, Ellen, nothing but. You see, after that bootlegger ran away with my wife...
Come on in here with me, Bert, and tell me all about it.
All right.
Oh, Madam Silvera, this is Bert Nelson.
Madam, pleased to meet you. Say, kid, what's this job you was telling me about?
You come on, sit down, Bert, and I'll tell you all about it.
You know, I ain't worked since the summer Lincoln ran for president.
Bert, can you still do impersonations?
Impersonations? Say, did I tell you what my great mistake was? When I did my impersonation of John Barrymore. He got so jealous he bribed Albee not to give me any more bookings. At least I figure it could only be that.
Oh, sure, Bert. I know you're great. Will you play a ghost?
Play a ghost? If I don't eat soon, I'll be one.
There's $10 in it for you. Cash in advance.
$10? Great. Now I can clean up and get my makeup out of Hawk, eh?
Bert, you sit down and I'll tell you all about it.
Shoot.
Now, I'll tell you what you have to say. And I got the clothes for you.
Or at least he was once until he made fun of the wrong person and...
I love it too. You're going to have to play the clip, but I love the name drop there. And then he says, I did a better job than he did. So he got me blackballed. I love it. He impersonated somebody and was better at it than they were. And it's a big name too. It's not like it's just, you know, some nobody.
Yeah. I can't think of who it was. It was like a Barrymore or someone, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she hatches his plan. So this is Emery's last ditch effort to try to get something out of Joyce.
She's going
to
jump on a ship she's gone after this. He's yeah, his last chance.
Right. And so she gets her friend to pose as Dick.
Yes.
Dick!
Yes, Joyce. I've come to you. I've come to warn you and to save you.
Save me from what, Dick?
To save you from this man. From Emery Yargo.
But it was he that brought you to me, Dick. I don't understand.
I've been watching you and loving you. And tonight, when you were in this great danger, they gave me the power to come and save you.
Then nothing he told me was true? He has no power?
He has only the power to deceive you. You must go away now. You must go back to Billy. I want you to marry Billy. You must forget me entirely.
And will you come to me again, Nick?
Never. Now go. Go away from here quickly.
I'm not sure how they went and did the ghostly apparition. And maybe within we're not the story. Supposed to ask.
Yes. So, and I think there's, you know, this is a movie, so there's suspension of disbelief expected by from the audience. And in this case, I think whether in at this time and even before this time, there were ways to fake this. They could do ghostly apparitions. Often it was done with steam and a projector with mirrors and reflected light, things like that. There were spiritualists who would produce this kind of effect. And so I think we're expected to believe that the reason that Joyce has bought into it. She believes in all this stuff. Yago produces spiritual writing on a slate. If you guys want to find out how to do that, there's a great series by J.K. Charles that covers it. It's the Sins of the City series. I think it's the second book of that series. It's another great spiritualist book. You can also read the Shabti, but they talk about how they would get this writing to show up on slates. It's fascinating. So interesting. Really, really, really crooked. Super crooked.
You're right. Well, Emery's isn't all that creative.
It's awful. It's literally a letter that says, "Dear Joyce, entrust this man with a lot of money. Yours truly, Dick." I mean, it's so bad.
He doesn't really make it appear. He has a blank slate, which he holds under the table. And then the whole time, it's very obvious to us, the audience, that he's got another slate on his lap.
Yes, which was something that it was one way to do it. More often, they would have the writing appear by spraying a solution on it. I expect that was a little more complicated to do on film. It was funnier, maybe, just to have him do the swap.
Yes, but yes, the letter, which somehow he was able to reproduce Dick's handwriting, or Joyce was just so overcome that any handwriting would have
both are looked very, just very like possible. Him. Yeah, she just so wanted it to be his. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's when the apparition then appears at the top of the stairs. Well, actually, the noise starts first.
Yes.
There's a weird, strange droning noise, which honestly, I was wondering if it was like, is this just an artifact in the film?
So because earlier in the first seance, Joyce says it's so noisy, like in like the propellers of a plane is what it's supposed to be. And so we're supposed to believe that they are supposed to believe that, oh, this is the sound of a propeller.
Right. But it, as far as you don't know what it is at first when you're watching the movie. And what, yeah, if you're sitting in the movie theater in 1929 and watching it and this noise, maybe your mind immediately goes to that's something in the movie. When you're watching a movie that's nearly 100 years old and that noise happens, I think, oh, the sprockets are slipping in the camera.
Fair enough. Yeah, it's definitely an unidentifiable noise to us today, for sure.
We see Ellen upstairs with a vacuum cleaner on a table.
Yep.
That's what's making the noise vibrating into the floor.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, so they do this whole thing, and it, of course, upon telling Joyce, don't trust this man, flee, spelled F-L-E-A, No, it's Bing Crosby and Bob Hope. But yeah, he's, you know, she does. She leaves. She's like, okay, done. We don't even, I don't think we even see her leave. I think it just cuts over to Ellen using the vacuum. And then we're gone. And then Iago comes
very
in.
Very shocked Emery. Yeah, yes. Emery Iago is just standing there like, what the hell did I just see?
Yes. And so from there, you know, we get our happy ending. Iago says, you won't believe what just, Ellen, you won't believe what just happened. I can't believe it. I'm in shock, you know. And she's like, oh, wow, yeah, so I guess you're going to quit now. And he's like, you better believe it. This is crazy.
Yeah, I thought this was all bunk, but no. You know, I'm messing with things no one should be messing with.
Yeah, and this is where it falls apart. This is a man who has books and books about how to fleece people with spiritualism. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't stop and go, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And he, in his response, it's in the script, right? It's such a clever way to do it. It's also a little bit clumsy. I think this is one of those things where if you read this in a book, you would believe it. But it's a little hard to swallow in film because, for one thing, we're watching a film. We're watching the actual technology that they would have been using to project this guy up onto the wall, at least as far as I could tell, right? And so... so the suspension of disbelief starts to fall apart a little bit there. There's just a couple of really big questions that are hard to get over. And then his behavior is like very, very worked up. Again, for a guy that has literally been, you know, popping his toes to make table knocking happen and levitate tables. And this thing happens one time and he 100% buys it. I guess you can say, well, he doesn't have any reason to think he's the one being fleeced. Yeah, I agree with that. But it's just a little bit hard. It's just a little bit clunky. Am I happy with the ending? I'm thrilled with the ending. I love it. But if you're talking about just craft specifically, Are the lines perfect? Is the acting perfect? Not really. And we get one more scene afterwards, but you had a thought. I'm going to let you go first.
Pretty much going to agree with you. It is a little clunky, but it is, and it is very much out of left field. And it also happens all rather quickly. Mm-hmm. It's you go through the whole film and, you know, it's Emery and he's kind of come up with this idea and it's this whole, you know, it was like Ocean's 11 sort of thing, you know, for like 45 minutes of the film and how are we going to do it? And then it's not going to go right. And okay, this is my last chance. And you know, like, okay, you're moving. And then it's like, and this happens. Like,
yeah.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I agree. It happens a little quick. I am really happy with it. We do get one more scene at the end of it where this is all kind of, I guess they happen back to back. Somebody comes in, it's our sailor friend again, and he has this petite little señorita with him. And she rolls her R's every time she says any word. And they want to get their photo together because it wasn't enough for him to tattoo her picture on his chest. And so you're like...
which is still tender.
Yeah. And you know, this is it. He's gone to the trouble of tattooing her face on his chest. This is the girl for him. They're going to end up together. Iago comes out and they set up the photo. You get the little couple there on the chair and you see Ellen and Iago reaching across, kind of touching each other's hands. She just hands him stuff without him asking for it. You get this perfect image of she is just the right partner for him. She's going to support him. He now sees how helpful she is, sees her value. They hold hands and they say, okay, hold still for the photo. And that's the end. And it's so cute.
Yes.
It's just so, so cute. I love it.
I find it fun that you think that this sailor has finally found the girl. I'm thinking, yeah, for this week. I'm still thinking.
He tattooed her face. I mean, and you know, he's saying, ouch, it's still tender. He tattooed her face on his chest. It's true love, Christopher. At least it's true marriage and maybe an uncomfortable divorce in a couple of decades. Probably not, though, because she might be Catholic and they don't do divorce. No,
well, true. All right.
I just think it's adorable because he can see so much that the first two girls are not right for the sailor. And now he's like, he just seems so enamored with her. I just think it's adorable.
It's possible. I'd like to think that both couples at the end of this film are, the, you know, finally found their life mates.
And I think that's what it's meant to portray. I think you're meant to see they're taking this picture of this other couple, but they're actually a reflection of where their relationship is now. And it's been a reflection of their relationship through the whole thing. I feel like there's some real thought put into it and like more than normal for little side characters. It's not just the drunk on the side of the road saying, hey, you two look cute together. You should get married.
Right.
What? It's a little more subtle. It's a little more thought out.
Well, should we get to ratings then?
Yes, let's go to ratings.
Okay. As always, I think Evelyn Brent is the true standout of the film. this is the third film we've seen her in, and every time I think we have said that she is the best thing about the movie.
Yes.
I think that holds true for this. She has just such an amazing quality. It struck me while watching her this time. I don't know if you've ever seen, have you ever seen Lucille Ball do a more dramatic role?
I never have.
There are times, there's some films I've seen, or even maybe even at times when she's doing, I don't know if you really would see it much in like I Love Lucy, but Lucille Ball has, when she's doing, I'll call it a more dramatic role, but you can always tell that there's just that right underneath the surface, there's a little bit of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Evelyn Brent kind of carries that same persona or whatever. There's especially moments
like Barbara Streisand or. Yeah, not Barbara Streisand, like Barbara Stanwyck.
Okay. The moments, especially when she first comes in and she had passed out and she's awake, she's drinking the coffee and she's trying to figure out exactly what Yago's game is.
Yes.
And he's like, oh, I've heard that before. She's being serious, but underneath it, it was just a little bit of humor. And it's like, she really struck me as like, wow, I feel like this is like, you know, what Lucille Ball would have been had Lucille Ball had been, you know, 30 years early or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Very much the same sort of, just the way she carries herself.
Interesting.
I am still not entirely convinced about Neil Hamilton. Like I said, I think there are moments, and then depending on the scene, that, you know, he's better than others. There is definitely other actors in the film that are the 1920s, 1930s. The first guy in Madame Savary, like, oh, I'd love to get a picture of my, you know, spiritual girlfriend. How much would that be? $25. My, that is a lot, isn't it?
It's a bit part, but yes, you're not wrong.
I think it's a fine film. It's a good film. It's not a bad film, but it's not one that really just, I'm going to scream and tell someone that they need to run out and watch.
Okay.
I think this is a very solid 3 for me. It is, again, I think I will probably watch Evelyn Brent in anything.
Yeah.
At this point. And if I, in,
she could be in a Huggies commercial and I'd watch that. She could play the dog in Uncle Tom's Cabin, a hound in Uncle Tom's Cabin, and I'd watch that.
It'd be the best portrayal of a dog by a human
ever. I know, I love that she says that in the movie.
Oh, that, yeah, she does say something along those lines.
Yeah, I play a hound in Uncle Tom's Cabin if you wanted me to.
But yeah, I think this is definitely a solid middle of the road kind of film for me.
Mm-hmm. So you're at a 3.
Yeah, I'm a 3.
Okay. You're wrong. No, it's not that you're wrong. I so much enjoyed this movie, and maybe I enjoyed it more than I should have, but the flow of this movie is spot on. It starts off with this kind of kitschy side character, but we don't get hung up in her. They don't throw a whole bunch of Madame Silvara scenes in there just to get the sideshow act in there and do a couple of giggles. They don't throw in laughs just to try and get you to laugh, even though it doesn't make any sense with the story. Yes, there is some rough acting in this movie as a product of the time, I think. And also, darn it, sometimes it's in the script. Sometimes the only answer to why did they say that, why did they do that, is because it's in the script. And there are some definite it's in the script moments in this movie. Mm-hmm. We definitely talked about the bit at the beginning where we first meet Joyce and Billy, that being the standout moment probably. But as the pacing is concerned, as the interactions between the characters are concerned, it stays focused on, from the very beginning, there's this guy, he's got this idea, he wants to run a con on some rich people, and the movie sticks with that. It really strongly adheres to the purpose behind this movie happening. This whole story is because of this. We don't get derailed. He doesn't abandon the idea of fleecing a rich person halfway through for some other thing, and we're like, where did that come from? This movie is not necessarily a stellar film because it's a stellar film. I think it's a stellar story. I think that the way this is written, the progression, the character introductions, the character the size of the characters, the cast, the main cast in this is perfect. They don't have a bunch of extraneous characters, and you're not left going, they said they talked to a police officer, but where was the police officer? So they have it's just a tight story. It's put together so well, and you get this twist at the end that you just aren't looking for. I think as a story goes, I told a friend of mine, this movie we're reviewing, it's like if I wrote a book, I have written books. This is a lot like the stories that I write. So I'm sure there's an element of me loving this because it goes exactly how I feel like a story should go. You don't have anybody in it who's just arbitrarily evil. You don't have anybody in it that is just, you know, kicking puppies because you have to make the point that they're an evil person. You don't have anybody throwing, you know, a cloak up in front of their face and drifting off the scene or anything like that. You have people with real motives in it. Even if the dialogue isn't the best, even if the acting isn't the best, this whole story completely works for me. I'm struggling to think of any part of it where I'm just like, nah, I don't buy that. I think the one part where that struggles a little bit for me is at the end where Iago doesn't question at all this sudden appearance of the spirit. But I also think that if it were written out, I mentioned earlier, I think if this were in a book and they could explain the motivations and the thoughts behind the characters, I think it's totally, totally viable. I agree with you. This is not the best film out there. I can't give it 5 O'Fulls. I want to because this is probably one of the more enjoyable films that we have watched in the last recent period of time. I think I'm having a hard time thinking of a movie we watched recently that I enjoyed the story more. There are other movies that I've enjoyed the acting more, not, you know, excluding Evelyn Brent, of course, because she's just stellar. There are aspects of other movies that I've enjoyed more, but just as a story goes, as completely a satisfying story where the whole arc takes me through this progression and ends up with not only with a little bit of a twist, but I'm so happy we get characters that get together at the end, not because something horrible happens and one of them has to rescue the other one, but because it's just a person saving the other person from themselves. I love that. It makes me so happy. You don't have people at the end where you're like, this guy's awful for this girl, or this girl's awful for this guy. There's a genre out now, it's cozy mysteries. You know, you don't have maybe people being slaughtered violently. This whole cozy genre phenomenon that's going on, this movie is that. It's a cozy romance. By the way, you'll see a couple of listings where this is listed as a mystery. This is not a mystery. So if you're watching a movie and you're expecting it to be a mystery, don't be disappointed. Just be aware this is not a mystery. But I'm super happy with it. For me, it's as strong 4 O'Fulls There are a couple of things about it that aren't great, but I feel like the story is so good, it's so solid, that it deserves that extra bump. There are other movies we watched that they're fine, I enjoyed them, they were good, but I don't feel like I want to go back and reference this again. This is a movie I want to reference again. I really want to give it 5 Othels, but from a film, from a cinematography standpoint, from even from a scripting standpoint, I really can't. So I'm very happy with 4 stars for this one. I'm happy you're happy with 3, or Othels. I'm happy you're happy with 3. It's just a little bit higher for me. Actually, it's more than a little bit higher than, for me, but I also have to acknowledge that it's not a 5 Othel film. It's nope, not okay. Rain.
No, fair. It's fair enough. And I would maybe agree with you if they're just... Where I don't want extraneous stuff, like I don't need scenes with Mr. Clayton talking with Joyce and forbidding him to go to the to see the spiritualist or whatever. Or
yes.
I don't need additional scenes of Billy, you know, trying to convince Joyce that this is all fake. I don't need that kind of stuff. But if you're gonna make the idea that Ellen and Emery, have had, you know, some sort of blossoming affection for each other or whatever, and it's going to play that an important role in the end of the film, that she's mm-hmm. going to go to the trouble of trying to save him from himself, as you said. And mm-hmm. if you're going to make that element that important in the story, I want to see some of that in the story. I want to see some of that in the film. I don't want that to go. And the 6 months that we've been together, you know, we're madly in love. Wait, what? What do you mean?
Yeah. No, and I think that if they were trying to sell it off as they had always been madly in love, I would have a real problem with the story. But I see it as at the end, as Iago coming around to see how much he values Ellen. I don't feel like he's felt that way through the whole movie. And maybe that's my perception being different than yours. I don't feel like when he says, oh yeah, I've been crazy about you too this whole time, I don't think he's being genuine.
No.
And I think if he were meant to be being genuine in that moment, I would really have a problem with this movie.
During that passage of time, we also find out that, and what you were saying is he maybe like, takes advantage or doesn't realize how much he relies on her, because even all the stuff she now knows how to do in the photography studio, we get a line when Ellen is talking with Madame Savary. Madame Savary says something along the lines about you're fitting in right or something like that. And it's like, and Ellen says, yeah, I do just about every, or I think it's actually Savary says you do just about everything around here now.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so that also takes place, you know, in this gap that we don't, of unspecified time. That maybe would have been nice to actually see, that Ellen is doing all this stuff and Emery isn't taking notice of how much that she's doing or something. Or because of that, we're seeing the photography studio actually becoming more profitable. Mm-hmm. All that takes place off camera in a gap of time that we really don't know how big it is. It, like I said, it could be weeks, it could be months. Well, don't know.
Yeah.
And that bothers me. If it's going to be that important for me to sell this relationship and to sell other aspects of the story, I feel like you need to explore that a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally disagree. I just 100% disagree with you. I think that, I've cut myself on my, sorry. I think that if this movie lagged, if there were slow bits in this movie, if it was unclear that she has been providing all of this, you know, extra work for him, basically taking care of him, you know, if they didn't make the point that after Ellen refuses to keep helping him, he's just stomping around upstairs for days or weeks at a time, just neglecting everything else, basically throwing a man tantrum or any tantrum. It doesn't have to be a man's tantrum. I think that, yeah, if we had been left with big questions, and maybe you're saying that you are left with big questions, I feel like because there's no emotional progress on Iago's part, on Emery's part, I don't feel like we're missing those scenes. I feel like if there were emotional progress on his part, yes, we would need those scenes in there. We would need to see him seeing her taking care of the studio and going, I didn't really realize she does that much for me. Or after she tells him, I'm not gonna help you anymore, him, if he then at that point was like, well, I really care about her and want her around after all. Yeah, we would need to see that scene. But right up to the point that he gets completely debunked, he is still just bound and determined that he can do this on his own. And so I understand what you're saying. I just disagree. I think probably part of it is just how you perceive their status throughout the film. If you think, oh, he's already fallen in love with her, yeah, it's very unsatisfying not to see those things. But if you're going through the whole movie thinking, well, she walks in and pretty much falls for him, and we know from the beginning that he did not hypnotize her. We as the audience know that, but we see her struggling internally, trying, you know, he said, oh, you're going to come back to me. I have so many comments I could make right now about that. But, you know, like, but she struggles with it. And she comes back and she says, you were so nice to me and you fed me and I'm still hungry. You know, but you know, that's not really what motivates her or most women, frankly, I don't think. But for her, this is not what motivates her. She's an intelligent person. She's smart enough to know when he's trying to hypnotize her and not to fall for it. And so for this whole, I think this whole progression is satisfied because I don't think he really falls for her until he kind of has no other place to turn, until he goes, oh, well, spirits are real. I'm like screwed and I'm scared now. And I'm just going to go back to my quiet life that I didn't appreciate before. And look, Ellen's just handing me the things that I need without even asking me for them. Oh, this is actually a person that is valuable in my life. And I think that if he had that moment at any point before then, you're exactly right. We need to see that. I just don't think that he does.
All right. Nope. Fair enough. So yeah, we will agree to disagree on this one.
It's so unusual. So I hope you guys are enjoying this. We have gone so long on this relatively short film. It's not very long. I think we've talked about it way longer than the actual movie is.
Yeah. It's only got a runtime of 66 minutes.
But I also think it's a little bit fun for us to really disagree about things every once in a while. And we're not, I think at the core, we're not disagreeing. You're not saying this is the worst movie ever. And I'm saying it's the best movie ever.
Right.
And depending on what you're focused on, it's a better or worse movie. Really, it is. Mm-hmm. I'm probably being a little bit unfair because there are aspects of this that I am weighing heavier than the actual cinematography itself, you know. And you're probably being a little unfair because this guy is just an emotionally unavailable guy, and I recognize that, and you don't. So I'm just kidding. I'm just partially kidding.
I'm just jealous of anyone that ends up with Evelyn Brent. That's what it boils down to.
I'm not saying you're emotionally unavailable. I'm saying he is. But yeah, I mean, why not? Yeah, kill the guy. Get him out of there. No, don't kill
him. All right. Well, that will be three oaths for me.
Four on that four. Note of murder from Lydia. Yeah,
On that note, I think we'll bring Darkened Rooms to a close, regardless of...
Oh, you missed a huge opportunity. You should have said, I think we'll shut off the light on Darkened Rooms.
Oh. but the light, the rooms are already dark. Regardless of our differences of opinions on the film, it has been an absolute blast talking about it.
Mm-hmm. It is. It always is. I can't think of a time that I've ever sat down to talk about a movie. I can think of times where I've sat down to talk about a movie and thought, I don't want to talk about this movie. But at the end, I always think that was so much fun talking about that movie.
Yeah, exactly. We have watched a few films where it's just like, I didn't want to watch this film. I don't want to talk about this film.
How do we even start? Gosh.
This is the film that's going to end the show.
Well, no. Not this one. This one was entertaining. I think this was an enjoyable story. Again, if you are interested in spiritualism and the history of it, there are loads of books out there, and I can definitely recommend reading The Shabti. I thought it was so much fun. And then, of course, I mentioned a couple of other books, but I think this was a fun film. It's a unique period in history, and it's a unique period in history celebrating a unique period in history.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely worth watching just for that alone.
And for Evelyn Brent.
But that will do it for this episode. Thank you very much for listening. We will be back in a month with another film. Until then, bye, everybody.
Bye. You said balls.
Crystal balls.